Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind another episode of Survivor 50. We're talking episode 7 and using our outwit, outplay, outlast moments in Survivor history to relate to this episode. And we got some interesting things to talk about today, John.
We do. We witnessed Survivor history this week. We had the largest vote in Survivor history ever this week.
Mm-hmm.
14 people voting because no one had lost their votes. No one had lost their votes. Only one person was immune. What an exciting return to actual Survivor this week. After last week's Blood Moon, before whatever next week's terrible thing seems to be. But you know what? We'll take this one week at a time. Episode 7. Seeing D go sucks. I really enjoyed D on this season. I think I just really enjoyed D overall completely. I think she's so entertaining. I think she's a phenomenal Survivor player. Seeing her go just because like she kind of ended up on the wrong side of the numbers here really sucks. But that's Survivor. And at least we had an interesting episode with scheming and plotting. And it gave us a lot to talk about, which is not what I was really expecting going into this week.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive right into these topics here. And the first thing we have is split votes, because that's what we had here. We had everybody deciding to split on Dee and Tiffany. And with 14 people, 12, if you obviously don't count Dee and Tiffany in this situation, it was like herding cats. Like, you're trying to navigate a bunch of people to go with your plan on a vote. And this was crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those really interesting situations where, again, because this is the most people we've ever seen navigating a vote, we're not really sure what's going to happen. And even prior to this week, I was talking to some friends and I was like, I don't exactly know where everyone sits in this tribe. Like, I know we have the supposed Zoom alliance on one side, and we clearly had, based on the preview, we had D Tiffany on the other side, but I didn't know where everyone else was kind of going to land. I didn't know where like the Christian Emily Devins group was going to end. I wasn't sure where Cerise Wizard of Oz was going to land, which quite frankly might be the best alliance name in Survivor history, and at least isn't a copycat alliance name.
I'd rival Big Brother. I'd rival like whatever you want to say that has alliance names. I think Cerise Wizard of Oz is by far miles better than anything.
Did you see the Instagram post Cerise? Yes. It's iconic. anyone who is listening, like, legitimately go over to Instagram, just go to Ceree's Instagram and see this beautiful image that Ceree put together for this alliance, because it's hilarious. It is so much fun. And you know what? At least it wasn't the plagiarized name of a alliance this time, because, Coach, I'm sorry, the Four Horsemen already exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you've watched Survivor Fiji. But yes, we are not talking alliance names, though that would be fun to do. Split votes. And to get all of these people, to get everyone minus four to go on D and trust that they're going to do that, plus get the people on Tiffany to lock into Tiffany, because nobody wanted to vote Tiffany because they all knew Tiffany was going to come back to camp. That was just a just in case D played something that it wouldn't fall back on any of them. And Coach had put like his trusted allies in the vote for Tiffany. Mm-hmm. But when you're yelling about the middle people, don't tell the middle people the plan, and Devin's is right there as a middle person voting in the majority, you run the risk of everything getting blown up.
Well, it's better to have that person in the middle who you don't trust in the majority than in the minority.
But he can just rally numbers.
Yeah, but if the numbers were so lopsided in this vote that it didn't really matter, what, the only way? I guess like seven. If Devin's Christian, Emily had flipped over
with Ceree and the Wizard of Oz.
No, you didn't need Ceree and the Wizard of Oz in this situation, right? Because all three of them were in the majority. So you could have just had them flip over with Dee and Tiffany. If Dee actually casts her vote, it's a 5. No, still just a 5-5-4 then, right?
So, but even if those six didn't even talk to it, they weren't going for Coach or whatever, because Ozzy has relationships with Emily, Rick, and Christian are in with Ceree. Like, that could be a six moving forward if they decided to be like, we want to just go for Jonathan, like, as a stray left field vote. They could have controlled everything because they're in the majority of the votes, and then they can just control where everything goes.
Yeah, you have a point, and this is really interesting. Again, we're navigating a situation where we've never had this many votes before in a tribal council, right? Mm-hmm. We've never had a situation where there are 14 independent people voting. We're at a merge. We have so many things going on. So navigating a split like this is tough. It's tough navigating small splits sometimes because of the risks that that go on with them. Bobby over here in the comments says D should have voted for Tiff. And that honestly takes us to our first example that we want to talk about. Let's talk about this, the split in Heroes versus Villains between Candace and Rupert.
Yeah. So with Candace and Rupert, the villains are just like, all right, we're going to split, but we also feel icky about Candace. So we're going to make her one of the splits and Rupert one of the splits because we think he has an idol. So if Rupert plays an idol, Candace is going to go home. But they didn't then take into account Colby and Rupert's votes. Mm-hmm. So then they can choose where they're voting, because if you vote for both Rupert and Colby, then it kind of negates their votes. You no matter where they put their votes, it doesn't matter. So in putting Candace as an option, this is something that this is something that Coach ran the risk of this in 50 of people just being, what if we vote somewhere else? And so they took the chance on going for Candace in case that was the split.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not quite the same parallel to 50 because there isn't as much risk of the numbers flipping in the situation because you only have two people. You're voting for specifically those two people. This is handling that situation a lot better. And this split is proposed to avoid the shot in the dark, which D does end up using here.
Mm-hmm.
I know everyone... It's really funny because it's one of those instances where you're like, oh, yeah, I really want this to hit right now. And then you kind of have that realization of like, wait, that means Tiffany goes home. And I don't think I'm ready for Tiffany to go home yet because she's been delivering these last two episodes.
Yeah.
So it is one of those like hard things in a split where he's like, oh, man, I know someone on my side's going home. I know this alliance that like, yes, seeing Coach sit there and spout haikus. And I don't know if you watched the secret scene, but he actually gave the Tidewalker moniker to Jonathan now.
Yep.
And as he reclaimed Dragon Slayer. So I like that Coach. That Coach is very entertaining. He's so bad at the game. And like, it's really disappointing seeing him kind of regress into old Coach again. But he did at least kind of know how to approach this situation based on the numbers he knew, based on the idea that this Shot in the Dark could be there. And that's where we really see the weirdness in that Heroes versus Villains vote. Because they're trying to play around an idol that someone on the villains actually has and isn't revealing to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because Russell is so confident that Rupert has one because of the rock he put in his pocket.
Yep, exactly.
And the fact that the girls, I think the girls do like correctly identify Candace is the person to get out there, right? And they go through the logic in that vote that, you know, Rupert's a threat. Like, obviously, he's like our number one priority to get home. Colby can't win challenges. And it's actually really interesting seeing this conversation in Heroes versus Villains while Rupert and Colby are deciding, okay, we have to put our votes on Candace because if the split is that way, it works out for us. And it's Colby suggesting that, right? And I think with Colby on 50, people are like, oh, Colby's like playing the game a little bit. And this kind of goes into some of the, this puts some credence into what Phil often says, that Colby's Heroes versus Villains game isn't as bad as people think it is, because he does actually understand the game of Survivor.
Yeah. I mean, the thought of like, well, let's not just vote for each other. Let's put our votes on Candace when you have only two votes. Like, it's so hard to not just go, well, it's you or me, so might as well vote off each other. They're like, no, wait, let's stick to our guns and go for Candace because she betrayed us last vote.
Yeah, exactly. It does kind of get into this, like, the stinky hero of it all. I think that is kind of one of the issues with Heroes versus Villains, is that the heroes do feel a bit righteous at times. And I still think we really see it at Tribal Council in that episode, but that's a totally different conversation. It's just so fascinating to see, like, because this is really early in split votes. And I think this is one of the things that the Survivor community really takes for granted as to what the Hidden Immunity Idol has provided for Survivor, right? Because split votes never needed to happen prior to the invention of the idol.
Right.
They didn't happen before the idol, right? They were just an unnecessary thing to do because you weren't playing around an advantage. And if you just got the numbers on someone, you could vote them out. And the introduction of the idol just made it so that split votes were something that could happen. And split votes are interesting, right? Even a cut and dry split vote like this one in 50 is interesting because of how you're navigating it, how you're trying to get people to split, and how you're trying to just like deal with so many different personalities. And Coach literally could not lead this vote. He was incapable of letting someone else decide what was happening here.
It's also because they're at different points in the game. Here with the Heroes versus Villains example and the 50 example, we can go into our 44 example of Josh and Jam Jam, where you run the risk of coming back to camp just voting, putting someone's name down, and then you're obviously then opposed to them because it's like, well, you voted for me, and you could get that retaliation back if they win immunity. Or because everything is ever changing, you could get hit back being like, oh, did you lead that vote? Sorry. You know, because Coach voted for Tiffany this episode. It could blow back on him if, you know, there are the numbers and so on for that. Because he voted in the minority, that person is still here. And he was like the rallier of this entire vote.
Yeah. I honestly, that is something that's so interesting, because when we look at 44 and this conversation, again, it revolves around this idea of like, does Josh have an idol or not? Because I mean, if anyone needs a refresher of the first season McKenna and I ever did the rewind for, coming after the swap, the weird 44 swap where they just moved one person over on every tribe, Josh had an idol from the journey that expired and then tried to, or he used it maybe. It's been a while since I've watched 44. That's not true. I actually did watch this entire episode in preparation for this podcast. But then Josh had taken the beads from Tree Mail and pretended it was an idol so that he could maybe skate by a little bit longer. And Carolyn clearly knew this wasn't an idol and was very vocal about that in conversations. But everyone wanted to play safe, wanted to sit back and make sure that Josh didn't have an idol. And originally the plan was to split on onto Kane. But it that
v Kane.
Yeah. But Carson revealed that information to Kane, and then Kane pushed back, said, okay, let's split on Jam Jam instead.
And so that's like a, I'm not taking one for the team here. Like, I'm not going to be that split vote that people decide to go against. I'm going to pivot to somebody else here. And just like Tiffany is trying to do of like, guys, why are we doing this? Vote somewhere else.
Yeah, and the episode did do a good job of trying to make it seem like there are other options to go in this. There's like some of that idea of like, okay, Coach is getting a little big in the britches. Like, does this mean Coach goes here?
Aaron said the edit had me believing that the vote was going to be flipped on Coach.
Yeah, I think there was a potential it was going to be Coach. I was a little skeptical of it, but I thought it was there. I think there is an argument that you could have pushed it on Jonathan if you wanted to for the edit, just based on what was going on. The problem is that we only see like, the only people we see are Dee and Tiffany really talking about voting for Coach, right? Like, we don't get that like fake out. I guess we kind of get
a little Emily bit of
a little bit.
A little bit of Emily, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like that group, which is one of these pivotal groups in this vote, but it wasn't it was I'm at the point where if Aussie, Suri, and Rizzo don't say something, I'm just assuming that that isn't a real plan. that's how good I feel about that alliance with
you. Are Mr. Logic and Analytics of the two of us. With the shot in the dark logic, wouldn't they have to split every vote?
That depends
how unless they don't have it. But yeah.
Unless they don't have it, or unless you're like completely convinced it's a blind side. It's a little tricky, but technically you could.
Do we think Tiffany is still a target without D, or can she like fly under the radar now that, you know, Camilla, a big target, who was her buddy, D, a big target, who was her buddy. I assume Aubrey is soon to go, who Tiffany really wanted to work with, is going to go soon. Do we think she is going to get cut, or just all of her allies?
The issue Tiffany has now is she is the easy vote. And when you have this many numbers, it is easy just to say, okay, let's go for the easy target here. Get that person out. I think it depends whatever type of twist we have coming next week. It's a really big thing with Tiffany. I think in an all newbie player or season of Survivor, Tiffany would be in a great spot right now. Because I think like that single player often slides through in those seasons.
Yeah.
In an all returnee player season, these are players who know the dangers of that single player. And then not just like as Tiffany, as like the threat that Tiffany is, but just like that player in that situation who doesn't really have anything to lose can be a number for people. That's a person who's really dangerous in the game. As we saw Coach really like kind of discuss today with like, he doesn't want the people in the middle, like deciding things that are going on. Right. And Tiffany's, if Tiffany's not in opposition, she's in the middle. And that makes, that's honestly more dangerous than her being opposition at this point.
Do you have anything else you want to say about these split votes, John?
I think the there's this really interesting aspect of the 44 one where Kane is like the original split target just because like people don't really know him. And again, this kind of goes into like some of the error, some of the I don't even know what word I was trying to say right there. I think it was errors, but then I thought about it and it didn't work in context. This is some of, maybe it does. This is some of the errors with the new era.
I can see why you paused.
I got really confused and tripped over my words there. But this is one of those things that really shows why the new era was struggling at first. It's because because without these moments for people to kind of get to know each other, you can just have someone like Kane be like, okay, well, I'm just a little quieter and I'm off on the side and no one's talking to me. So they become an easy vote, right? Whereas like Jam Jam is also an easy vote because there's only three members of his original tribe there still.
And two are not eligible to get voted for. Carson and Carolyn are both immune. So even more that he's on the outs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, right. And then I forgot, like, him and Carolyn are kind of, like, fighting at this point, too.
Yeah.
So it kind of just made sense with Jam Jam. And obviously, Jam Jam is a threat. Jam Jam goes on to win the season. That's confirmation bias, however, so we're not going to use that in our evaluation of the situation.
All right. We are moving on to Outplay. And how could we not talk about When It Rains, It Pours? It's an iconic Survivor challenge, one that I would love to compete in. And in this instance, Stephanie did it on a journey. We didn't have the full group trying to get tempted down or anything like that. She had to last a certain amount of time when the pot dropped, and she would get an advantage, otherwise lose her vote. And I like the way that this happened, but what I was telling you when the episode was going on, it would have been interesting had they done it, all right, you know, X amount of minutes, you keep your vote, another, and then just increasing advantages as time goes on, where you can just drop out if you want to, get back to camp faster, or if you want to stay longer at Exile, Journey, Shipwheel Island, then you can get a better advantage. And I think that could have been an interesting way to tie in When It Rains, It Pours and the solo kind of version of it.
I've done a lot of thinking about this challenge. I've watched it twice. I've watched other iterations of it since then. I don't think this worked.
Really?
I don't, because it's not entertaining to watch one person stand there with their arm above their head.
Well, okay. Yes. As like a... as a TV show part of it, yeah, I guess, but like right? As a journey, I think it worked
kind of, like, it makes sense. It's just, it's so weird because the more I analyze the fact that we use this on the journey, and Blake made a good point on, I think it was Blake made this point, oh, maybe it was Fishback on the Know-It-Alls, actually. I've listened to a lot of podcasts today. Someone made a point where essentially holding your arm up for an hour is as soon as Stephanie starts doing it, you have to do it for the rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay, cool. Like, I could do that, but I'm not going to. But the point is like, it's not that entertaining. We got a bunch of different like angles of Stephanie doing.
We have Aaron popping in again saying it was kind of lame because the cool part is that there were food bribes a lot of times when It Rains, It Pours.
I think the thing is, this is the first time we've seen an endurance challenge as a journey challenge.
Yes.
Right? Like a solo one.
Like the closest would be like Eva stacking stuff, but that's not really
an endurance. That's a dexterity challenge, not an endurance challenge, right? Which also led into Stephanie's lie anyways. Like, that's clearly what Stephanie had on her mind when she said, hold it for half an hour, you keep your vote. Hold it for an hour, you get an advantage. Because 48 had just aired right before they went out for this, so it was clearly on her mind. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is like, an endurance challenge is exciting because you're seeing people go at it head-to-head with each other.
Yeah.
And I think Aaron does have a point. Like, the food bribes are an interesting aspect of this. And it's, again, one of those things where it's like, why don't we have food bribes in Survivor anymore?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we just have Jeff coming out with a plate of cookies and being like, hey, you guys want cookies?
I mean, even without that necessarily, just in, like, in Africa, the first time we see it, we have T-Bird just singing Tomorrow from Annie the entire time. And then her and Clarence playing rock, paper, scissors. And T-Bird's like, I won. Are you going to drop? Mm-hmm. Or, and then it's that battle of like, I was hoping I'd win that rock, paper, scissors so I didn't have to drop. Do I actually do it? And I think just that social interaction of everybody, or you know, Parvati grinning, bearing it for the record that will never be broken. I think this definitely benefits from more people on the beach. If it was a trio journey or something, maybe this would have been a bit better.
Then at least one person's losing their vote, though, and we don't want that.
True.
I think what it comes down to is when you have a challenge like this, especially an iconic challenge like this, you have enough time to run it as a journey, but not as an immunity challenge. Like, that's my concern with it, actually. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not even just like, hey, we don't want challenges to go long. We've learned that in Survivor in the new era, right? Because of the condensed schedule, especially with 24 players this season, they want these challenges to be shorter. But we still have time to send one person to do this for an hour, which is honestly probably how long this challenge lasts anyways most of the time.
That's how it was in Heroes versus Villains. In Heroes versus Villains, they introduced the perch and just make that perch narrower, and then you've got people falling a lot faster.
And we know production loves making perches narrower.
Exactly. And like Millennials versus Gen X, we had it where you had to hold both hands on the bar. Both hands were chained up there. Winners at War only had one, but you couldn't use your free hand to brace anything. Like, there are ways that the production team did it to condense it. Slap everything all in one. Like, have both hands, a smaller perch, and food temptations.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, again, I don't want to flack on production that much because I still enjoy Survivor and I enjoy what I'm seeing. But it's just, this almost feels like a slap in the face to fans of Survivor. When you do this as like this throwback, and it's like
okay, dangling, you know, a cherry or whatever, it's just like, oh, you got it.
Yeah. And then what about the fact that Stephanie has to hold up this arm for an hour and then has to do another endurance challenge in the same position right afterwards?
Well, that's just unfortunate.
It is, but she's the only one who had to do that.
Yeah, but you know. That them's the breaks. You want an advantage? Well, maybe you don't get immunity.
That's fair.
If it was someone else who didn't have a bum shoulder, it would be fine.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just, I think I just want to see this challenge run out, right? You know, you're going to run an immunity. If you're running an endurance challenge anyways in the episode, why isn't this it? And I get it. You have this condensed schedule. Temptations help with that condensed schedule.
For sure.
Right? Like, this challenge, yes, okay, it went 6 hours in...
Three people dropped for PB&J.
In Heroes versus Villains, yeah. Heroes
versus Villains.
Right? Like, you can do it. Maybe you have to make the temptations a little more tempting. Maybe steak, there are some people...
burger instead of, like, donuts.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you even make it... change it to be something like the way they do it in Australia. I love the Australian, we don't talk about Australian Survivor that much on this podcast, but I love the tribal variation of this in Australian Survivor where they're holding sandbags over their heads that are attached to it, right?
Well, like, it happened in Ghost Island, so.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. I mean, I'm totally referencing Ghost Island and not Australian Survivor because that's what I remember it from.
Yes, exactly. Good job.
But like, that's the type of thing that you can do, right? Like, put sandbags, put some weight up there, make those type of variations to this challenge so that we do see it in its entirety with everyone going at it. Because I get it. Running an endurance challenge, I understand why we didn't have like a 14 person endurance challenge here, right? The logistics of that, chances are the more people involved in endurance challenge, the longer an endurance challenge is going to go on.
Right.
So I get why we're getting these endurance challenges.
Or maybe just save When It Rains It Pours for later on in the season.
That's what it comes down to. It's just such a choice to do this in a place where you can't even have the people who have done this challenge previously competing in it.
See, I love when people repeat
comments
like that.
And it's like, sure, someone could have, right? Like, Ozzy could have ended up on this journey, I suppose, but we didn't have that. But if this was an all-around, you guarantee the person who's done this challenge before has to do it. And then Jeff gets that moment of, like, talking about the past, which we know he loves doing.
Yeah. But I was happy to see it again. I thought it left for like an interesting interesting way to do a journey. It's different, and I liked it better than some because it was easier for Stephanie not to lose her vote.
Yeah, this one actually felt almost, it's so weird because we're talking about how we don't want people losing their votes. This one almost felt too easy not to lose your vote.
Yeah, I feel like it needed that balance of, you know, maybe it could be like, don't lose your vote, letters from home, and then like an advantage. But if you go for the advantage, you don't get the letters from home. Like that could be something to incorporate with an endurance challenge because that could pull on people's heartstrings over an advantage in the game.
I think you just take what you did with 48 with how with what Ava had to do with the stacking, where it's like get to this point and then maybe you go for the next point, but you have this risk of losing it all, your entire stack. Just say, hey. If between 30-35 minutes, you keep your vote. Beyond that, your vote's at risk unless you hit the sex advantage.
Yeah.
Right? Like, put windows, time windows on it. It's just hard to do that without, like, having someone there saying it and just, like, having to do the visualization. It would have put a little more effort in from production side, I guess, to make it
quiet. Yeah.
It would have been fun, I think. I think if there was, like, a little more... It almost felt like... I can't believe I'm saying this. There wasn't enough risk on this journey.
Whoa! And maybe that's why it felt a little bit better than other journeys.
Maybe.
It wasn't Yahtzee and it wasn't Tetris Tumble. You know, it was like willpower.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting journey to maybe, you know, get some different ideas off of to go in the future that I think endurance could be a useful journey, but maybe we up the stakes slightly. Maybe it's 2 hours or an hour and a half or something like that.
Yeah. Very, very, very true.
All right. Outlast. And we're talking about Firsters setting the tone. Obviously, we don't know exactly how Dee is going to set the tone for this jury. We're only going to be kind of predicting here. But out of some of the exit press, Dee is just it's a game, girl. So, she's totally chill and is... in my heart of hearts, going to set the tone of like, whoever's the best player should win. I have no hard feelings and you should come out of that as well with no hard feelings. I just messed around in a game. Like I don't hate you personally. So having that energy as the mayor of Ponderosa is going to be really good for a returning season when a lot of people come out of that hurt.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where Dee could really go either way, right? Obviously, exit press makes us believing, you know, game, focus on that. Dee can also be a bit of a firecracker sometimes.
For sure. So, we saw it in the episode.
We saw it in the episode, right? We saw Jonathan trying to exploit that in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really fun to have someone like Dee there. I also think having a winner as... the mayor of Ponderosa has only technically happened. Well, technically, there's no mayor of Ponderosa when it comes to Winners at War. So I don't think it's ever happened before.
Yeah.
Right? So it's an interesting situation, right? Where you have someone who has won the game. They know what it takes to win the game. They're also very game savvy, indeed. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this jury evolves, especially with the people who might go there and be bitter. Is this something that Dee will help quell or manifest, right? This idea of like, how is Dee going to focus on jurors as they come there? And it is so fascinating because I think this role is super important. And it's one of those things that doesn't get a lot of attention in modern Survivor.
I feel like her direct kind of first juror counterpart is Chaos Cass in Second Chance, because Cass is like, I only talk shit about you in the game. Like, I think we could be great friends now that you're here in Ponderosa, and is excited to, you know, analyze the rest of the game and see how well people are playing and come from it from a separate kind of ground. And she is Chaos Cass, and you know, Dee can have a hot streak, so they do have that similar like abrasiveness in certain aspects, but at the same time can remove themselves from the game and be like, all right, let's see what you actually did. If you got me out, that doesn't hurt me in any way. If that worked for your game, show me how.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate, and I like the fact that we have my Ponderosa during mm-hmm. Second Chance, and we can see Cass's thought process. And it's so fascinating seeing Cass say that, sit there and be like, don't play the same game you did before. Mm-hmm. I will not respect your game if you play the same game you did before. Show me that you are taking advantage of the second chance.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really embodying the theme. And I think that is something that a first juror has the opportunity to do.
And the way that she navigated her relationship with Savage once he arrived, he was like, I'm not going to talk to Cass. I'm not going to associate with Cass. We're just going to exchange pleasantries and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, as those few days start going, he's like, wow, Cass is my best friend out here. She's great. Yeah. I can't believe I said any of that. I think it was just the heat of the moment coming out from the game. And the fact that Cass was able to just take Savage at his own pace and mm-hmm. and kind of, I don't want to say turn the tides a bit on him, because I did rewatch his tribal council, final tribal council question and everything like that. He was like, my vote is open, mm-hmm. which I don't think he could say necessarily if he was the first juror and, you know, coming in hot and heavy. I think if he was the first juror, we might see something a little bit closer to Lex and All-Stars.
Yeah, I think that's why I think the first juror is so important, why this Mayor of Ponderosa is such an important role, is because they do set the tone. And it's how they greet people. Cass greeting Savage and being like, okay, give him a space. Let him do it. And then them getting to the point where they're so super, by the end of Savage's My Ponderosa, him and Cass are like super buddy-buddy. Like,
this is they're in confessional together.
They're in confessional together. This is the first time two trial lawyers have ever been the first two jurors. It's going to be so exciting.
Yeah.
Right? They're just like amping each other up. But you do have Lex in All-Stars, which is the opposite, right? Like, Lex is so bitter there. And because he's the first one there, he just has all that time by himself to stew in it. The next person there is Kathy, who's also stewing in that same
mm-hmm.
like
betrayal. In
that same betrayal and rage from it. And because of that, they can kind of taint everything. And we see when we get into that final tribal council, the only person who's really not affected by it, who had been there a decent amount of time, is Shean.
Yeah, I was gonna say Shean's the only one like, I don't care, just pitch your vote to me and then I'll go wherever. Like, if she was the mayor of Ponderosa, I don't think people would have listened to her, unfortunately.
No.
But I think Lex just fueled when, you know, Tom got blindsided, then when Alicia gets blindsided, just like fuels that rage of like, let's get him, instead of, you know, take a breath. It's a game. They made a game move to try and win. And I think with Dee being the first juror, Aaron asked, do we think it's going to be a bitter jury or a jury based on gameplay? And I hope it's going to be a jury based on gameplay and not err on the side of All-Stars. I hope that everybody can put the game aside for at least this one moment of voting for the winner and then take everything with you and then deal with them later. But like, vote for the winner based on the game that they played this season. And if they blindsided you, it was for a reason. They wanted $1 million.
That's the thing, right? There's $1 million on the line. I think with the exception of All-Stars, most of our returning player seasons have not had bitter juries. They've mm-hmm. all been gameplay-based juries. I mean, there's some argument with Heroes versus Villains, but I think it's pretty safe to say that isn't technically a bitter jury. I think that is a jury who very much disliked one man on that in that final tribal council, but also Sandra played the game that would get the votes there, and that gameplay is important. So
I don't know. In Parvati's book, she said it was a bitter jury, so I'm going to believe the book. It was written.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. But that's part of like Survivor. So if 50 does have a bitter jury, the game that wins that jury is one that can win.
Navigate around the bitterness.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So it's either you're the opposition to the person who has embittered the jury. You are sociable enough to avoid that. Think of like Sarah Lucina in Game Changers and just how sociable she was to get all those votes in that final tribal council. Right. And again, that is kind of a bit of a bitter jury there because they are against Culpepper, but
I think that's a two-sided.
I agree.
Of like a clash of clans.
Yes, I agree. And I think what it comes down to is the people going out to 50 and what we've seen so far from the people voted out of 50, the people who are still on 50, these are people who love the game of Survivor. And I think they really respect that. And I think they are going to want someone not just to represent 50 the best they can, but Survivor as a whole the best they can.
I just really love this thought analysis of how the first juror could reshape the season. It was Coach, you know, blindsided, or Jonathan blindsided at this vote, how they might shape the jury then leading to the end game of 50.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting. It's really interesting now that we've entered the jury phase of this season to see how things are going to evolve and how they're going to play out. Because I think we're starting to get a better, like a clearer idea of what the end game of this season is going to start looking like. Which seems wild to say when there are still 13 people left in this game. But I think there's a very clear line based on the edit, based on what people are saying in the episodes, who actually has a chance of winning this season and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, I think it's a really small list of who could actually win this season.
So we are going to be watching that Heroes versus Villains episode that we've talked about throughout this episode. It's episode 12, A Sinking Ship. It is a double boot, so you get the bonus Danielle coverage for free. Well, sort of. This episode has When It Rains, It Pours. It has the Colby Rupert split vote. So watch that so you can listen to us tomorrow over on Patreon.
Yeah, and
in the Specialist Universe, John.
Oh, we got lots. Phil and Will broke down the episode on Wednesday, as usual. Phil and Blake were joined by Mikey B from Micronesia yesterday, talking Watertown whiskey and all about 50. He has remained a real fan in 50, or through 50 seasons. So check that out. It was a really fun conversation. Phil is going to be joined by Adam Klein this weekend for the Power Rankings. The predictions episode is going to be on Monday this week instead of Tuesday, like usual, with Gordon Holmes. That should be great. I mean, Gordon is a fantastic personality in the Survivor community. And if you haven't listened to what he says, like, just do it. Okay, he's out there doing a lot for Survivor, which means that Matt Chat this week, Tegwith is going to have Franny, but that's going to be on Tuesday. So those are just like switching spots. Mm-hmm. And then Phil and McKenna are going to be wrapping up Australian Survivor on Tuesday.
It's done. Redemption. Someone will be redeemed.
Well, maybe it'll be the viewers for having to watch a week with this Final Four, but we'll see. Honestly, the season had been really good until you get to this week and you're like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. And then, of course, next week, I don't know, there's some twists happening, so I'm sure Phil and Will will have plenty of insight on that on Wednesday after the episode. And then McKenna and I will be back here to rewind whatever happens and hopefully find something that connects to something that may have never happened in Survivor before.
Yes, but before we go, we do have one last question from Jake. Christian winning chances? I don't mind a Christian win at all, but if I'm trying to pick a side between Devin's Christian Emily and Suri Rizzo Ozzy, I go Suri Rizzo Ozzy over Christian Devin's Emily.
I think of that group, Devin's probably has the highest chance of winning at this point. I think Christian had, it's hard to evaluate because Christian's been so overexposed to us because just because of going to tribal council every week. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it could really go either way. I would say if I'm like tiering the chances, I would say he's in like my second tier of chances to win. Maybe like bottom of second tier, top of third tier is where I would place him. With only probably like 5 or 6 people ahead of them at this point.
All right. Well, still decent shot to win. So I'm digging Christian. I like his chances.
The season's entertaining. That's where I feel. Yeah.
Alrighty, everyone. We will see you next week with another episode of the Survivor Rewind. Goodbye.